Welcome to the Nintendo Power Zone. We are a video cast / podcast dedicated to bringing you the best Nintendo related topics. As always, I'm your host, Nice One, and I'm joined today by my co-host, Jaden Winsong. How's it going, brother?
It's going well. It's, what is it, Labor Day today?
It is Labor Day. We're doing a holiday episode. We never do any of these. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting. So, we've had a very busy Fortnite. Over the past 2 weeks, we had the Pokemon World Championships. We had two different Nindies events, one for the UK and one for the US. We also had a Nintendo Direct for Dragalia Lost. That's Nintendo's first original IP mobile game. So there's a whole lot to cover. So we might as well go ahead and just slide right into the powered up news. And so we had the indie highlight. So whole lot of stuff to come out of this. Let's just run through the games that they announced at this Nindy highlight. So they had Hyper Light Drifter, Wasteland 2 Director's Cut, Bastion, Undertale, Light Fingers, Tower Falls, Zarvat, Jackbox Party Pack 5, Super Brothers Sword and Sorcery episode. We had Bullet Age, Level Head, Transistor, Dragon Marked for Death, Desert Child, Treasure Stack, Mineko's Night Market, Samurai Gun 2, The World Next Door, King of Hat, and Untitled Goose Game. I think I'm reading the U.S. version.
Yeah, it's the U.S. Let's do the U.S. first. I think that's a good
thing. All right, so yeah, we'll start with the U.S. Direct. So it was a little bit different from the U.K. version because some of the games that were announced during the U.K. event were actually released that day. So this is a pretty good list, by the way, for the U.S. I'm super ecstatic about Hyper Light Drifter coming out. It's about time. We're finally getting Undertale. We have a release date for Undertale, September 18th. Mm-hmm. Never played it, but everybody I know who has played it has said amazing things about it to me. So finally going to get my hands on it, and I'm going to get to play it portable. This is a big good get for the Nintendo Switch. I think the game that I was most intrigued in is Samurai Gun 2. Yeah. Outside of that, a lot of games, a lot of nindies, love the support. And if I'm being honest, 2018 was a good year for nindies as a whole because they've kind of kept the Switch afloat during the slow months where there wasn't a whole lot going on. So I'm excited about all the nindies that we have coming out. But yeah, for me, it's all about Hyper Light Drifter and Undertale and Samurai Gun 2. What are your thoughts on this Direct?
Well, I mean, so one of the things I particularly like about this Nindy Direct that was a little bit different from the other ones is the ratio of things that have already been released on other systems versus completely new things was skewed more towards completely new stuff as opposed to things that we've seen before. We've seen Hyper Light Drifter released before, Bastion, Undertale, and there was one more, wasn't there? Transistor. Those are the four that we've seen released, but all these other ones seem to be new ones. Jackbox Party Pack is a new installment into the series, which is, I'm pretty sure it's a new one. I could be wrong on that. But a lot of these seem to be new titles completely, and I'm excited about that. I think, as a whole, the indie scene is much more exciting to me than the AAA gaming scene. Battlefield 5, Battlefield, who the fuck cares? I'd rather be playing Undertale. I mean, shit.
Yeah, this is a great list of games, and I don't even know if I'm going to get a chance to play even half of them. There are still indie games on my Switch that I just haven't had a chance to touch yet, especially since I haven't bought Octopath yet, and I was the one in this show that was extraordinarily hype about that game.
I know,
and I still haven't bought it. Like, I don't know what's going on. It's been a very interesting couple months for me, so hopefully I'm going to get more time to game. But yeah, I'm looking forward to a lot of these indie games. Like Nintendo's weird schedule for directs this past month, or in the month of August, since we are now on September, what, 2nd?
Mm-hmm. Third.
Yeah, their game schedule, or their direct schedule has been where they try to cram as many as they could into August at the end, didn't they?
Yeah, it's been pretty interesting. And apparently, some of the rumors floating around is that there's supposed to be another Smash Brothers Direct sometime in the next 2 weeks. I don't know how substantial that rumor is. We'll find out in 2 weeks. But there seems to just be, a massive storm of information coming out in relation to Switch games. And that's not even including some of the stuff that we've seen in the past 2 weeks at Gamescom and PAX West, which we're going to be doing in a different episode, hopefully. But so we can talk about those later. But the point I'm trying to make here is we got tons of information coming out. It's great.
Yeah, so we might as well just go ahead and segue into the UK Direct, and we'll talk about them both at once, is that in the UK Direct, they had a bunch. They had 16 games unveiled during that Direct. So they had Nightcall, Monster Boy and the Cursed Kingdom, The Gardens Between, Streets of Rogue, Bad North, Moonlighter, This War of Mine, Children of Morta, Everspace, Baba Is You, Slay the Spire, Windjammers, Windjammers 2, Terraria, Prison Architect Nintendo Switch Edition, Morphe's Law finally got a second announced trailer, and it's released, and it was released the day of this Direct.
Yeah.
Now, I want to focus on Morphe's Law just for a second. Just for a second. Last year, they announced it around this time in the September Direct of last year, the Nindies event. I was so excited about Morphe's Law when it first got announced. A brand new shooter for the Switch. At the time, the only shooter game we had was Splatoon. Now, the problem here is that in the time since Morphe's Law was released, we have had games like Paladins and Fortnite come out. And now Morphe's Law seems like it's lost in the fray of all the other shooters, because you still have Splatoon, which got the Octo expansion, which was a massive update for that game. Then obviously Paladins, which is at best we can describe it as a Overwatch clone. And obviously Fortnite is the hottest third-person shooter game in the world right now.
Yes, so I want to back up real quick for the viewers that actually do like Paladins. That's not a bash on Paladins. I've heard some really good things, but we can't knock that. We can't deny the fact that it does have a bad reputation for being a quote unquote clone. That's not to say it's not good. That's not to say that it's worse and or better. It's just we got to be real about the reputation that it has.
Well, not just that. I mean, this is the closest we're going to get to Overwatch on the Nintendo Switch the way it stands right now. Who makes that game? Blizzard has had no fundamental interest in porting Overwatch over. So I don't think calling Paladins a clone or the fact that it's on the Nintendo Switch is a bad thing. I have not yet played it. I downloaded it. But hey, everybody I talk to tells me it's a lot like Overwatch. And I'm like, that's not a bad thing, because Overwatch won many Game of the Year awards. And
exactly,
if something's popular, you can always expect to find a few clones of it running around. That's just the way the gaming industry works.
Exactly. I just wanted to be clear that that wasn't meant to be derogatory in any way for you people who play Paladins. Morphe's Law.
Yes. So I was saying, I feel like Morphe's Law, when it was announced originally, the developers knew they didn't have any competition on the rise, so they felt like they could take their time developing this game. Unfortunately, it looks like the more popular games have come out. I know Paladins was semi-popular on the PC front, and Fortnite obviously being popular on every platform that it's released. Morphe's Law was late, and I kind of feel bad for it, because this was a game I was anticipating, and now I'm just playing Fortnite or Splatoon on my Switch. And plus there's been like an announcement that Morphe's Law has been kind of buggy in its current state, and I think they need to do a little bit more work to make this game, palatable for people. But right now it feels like Morphe's Law just isn't going to cut it now that there's competition on the horizon.
I think there's a lot of truth to that. Morphe's Law, to back up real quick, day one bugs are unfortunately just a thing these days. It just is. It doesn't matter who you are. Doesn't matter if you're a AAA game company. Doesn't matter if you're a tiny game company. It just happens because it's hard. It's expensive to do in-house quality control and QA testing and all those other sort of things. So you don't see it as often. You get some of them, but you're gonna miss him. So that doesn't surprise me. What does surprise me a lot, is the seeming lack of support after the game has come out. They made a big deal about it. It was it E3 where they originally showed that?
Murphy's Law was announced during last year's Summer Nindies Direct.
Okay, okay. I thought they had a bigger announcement than just that.
Well, they gave it a lot of time during that direct. Like they had they had a full on trailer, gameplay footage. They made it look like it was already working when they announced it.
Yeah, and so with considering the big deal that they made about it, and how it's kind of just released, and there's been no pomp and circumstance at all, it is a bit weird. I kind of wish they had done a bit more, but yeah, it's weird. It feels really weird.
So, among the other games on the list, I know you were excited about a few of them. So, what was it? Windjammers and Windjammers 2.
Oh, yeah. Windjammers is a classic. It's a cult classic game from, like, the 90s. It was, I think it was originally an arcade game. But this is, for people who are in the retro game collecting community, most of them know about Windjammers. So if you were to draw the word Windjammers, they'd be like, yeah, this game is sick. But basically, it's like, it was a, how do you describe it? It's like Frisbee Battle. That's basically what it is. It's a dumb Frisbee Battle with all the, like, 90s over-the-top geometric shape and blinging colors that they had. So this game is super saturated in just 90s culture. So,
well, it looks like, to me, it reminds me of, like the character designs and all that. They remind me of Street Fighter characters. And the, you know, with the early 90s style music also reminds me of like that Street Fighter style music, you know, by, her name escapes me and I'm going to get shredded. Yoko Shimomura. It reminds me of old school Yoko Shimomura music. It just has that vibe to me, and it's freaking Frisbee Battles. Like that just screams retro game. Like,
oh, yeah.
All those, like, there are all these old, like, basketball games and football games that I used to play on the NES, and this totally has those vibes for me. And I'm like, I've never heard of Windjammers, but that looks amazing.
Yeah. Neo Geo arcade system in 1994. So it's Neo Geo wasn't as big in terms of an American release, but it does have a cult following. And if you look at the original character designs from Windjammers 1, they even have those dumb, like, 90s shades that were very reminiscent of mid-90s. Like, we're talking, like, you know those shades that Bret the Hitman Hart used to wear on WWF? Yeah. Some of those characters have those kind of designs, and that's what I'm talking about. Like, this is one of the reasons why it's such a cool classic, because it's so steeped in the nostalgia of the 90s. So,
well, like, they also have, like, those rainbow lenses in the glasses that people used to wear back in the day. I'm not gonna lie, I had a pair of those. Before I started wearing glasses full time, like, you know, real vision glasses full time. Oh, yeah. I used to have those, like, I don't remember what they're called, but they had that glossy, like, coating over them to help them look better. And people told you they reflected the sun better. You just look stupid, but that's how things were in the 90s. We did stupid things and thought we were cool.
Hey, they were cool. You kids these days just don't understand the definitions of cool. That's my story. Hey, you know, it's like that Simpsons meme where it's like, the kids. Is it me who have changed? No, it's the kids. The kids are wrong.
Exactly.
That's what it is.
So Prison Architect is another game from the Direct, though, that I thought looked pretty cool. I was like, oh, this is neat. Like, you get to build prisons, and you have your prisoners who are trying to escape while you try to, like, make the most fundamentally, like, crazy prison that you can. I'm like, this looks fun. Like, kind of reminds me of, like, Fallout Shelter, but with a twist.
Yeah. Prison Architect has been a game that's been out on the PC scene for a while. It's I don't remember when they first released. 2-3 years ago? It's not a new game, but it is a good game. It's one of those sorts of, like, arcade-y simulation games, like Game Dev Tycoon or whatever that game was, kind of in the same genre of that. And so from that standpoint, these games always do well on the indie scene, and I think it'll translate well to the Nintendo Switch also. So that's I think it's a good fit. I think it's a good choice. We'll see how the touch controls work with all that and how it actually translates when you're actually doing it, because you know, I'm used to a mouse and keyboard, but eh.
Another game that I'm actually thinking that a lot of people are going to be excited about is Terraria. Now, I know this game skews pretty young, but I know that the fan base for it is kind of rabid. They love this game. One of my best friends, his daughter, loves this game. She plays it on the PS3 and the PS4 constantly. So I think this is a really good get. Similar vein to how good Minecraft was, you know, for the younger kids. This is a good game. I've never played Terraria. Like, there are a lot of these indie games that I don't get my hands on just because I don't have a lot of time for independent developed games, because I don't have that much time in general. I mean, between work, you know, family, I can barely play the AAA titles right now. So it's kind of hard to go ahead and get, you know, in some indie, you know, love. But every now and then I get my hands on an indie and I do love it. But so there are some that I am looking forward to, but Terraria is not one of them. But I know a lot of people that this is a big deal for. And yes. I know how popular Terraria is because there are toys for this game.
Yes.
Not a whole lot of video games get toys. Let's be honest about that. Not a whole lot of video games get toys.
Yeah, I'm actually one of those people who are really stoked for Terraria being released. I don't think it ever released on the 3DS, which is what I wanted it to eventually release for, more on the portable side. But actually now that it's coming out on the Switch, I'm really excited for. I picked it up on PC when it first released. And this was, to back it up, Terraria was basically Minecraft in 2D. Minecraft was originally geared towards, this was back in like 2006, 2007. It was geared towards people who wanted to have nostalgia about the retro 16, 8-bit sort of thing of the 90s. So as you can imagine, most of these kids at this point in time were like 18 to 20, my age group. What happened, what surprised everyone, was the fact that, 3 to 4 years later, Minecraft saw an unexpected boom from the kids, from kids who had no idea what retro games was or any of these sorts of things, but it picked up really well for them. And so Terraria was developed a little bit after Minecraft. I think it was like 2009-ish. When the game first came out, 2009, 2010, I'm not exactly certain on the date, but I think Terraria was another one of those cases where it was originally targeting adults, but somehow kids found it as an alternative to Minecraft, and it exploded in recent years.
Well, the release date I have for it was in 2011.
Yeah, right about there. It might have been alpha builds in 2010, I think, or maybe early access. But my point is, it's a great 2D alternative to Minecraft. It's there's been another version of it where it's like a future, so like sci-fi. So Terraria is more like fantasy swords and crossbows and magic sort of shtick. So really cool game. If you like the 2D kind of retro aspect, check it out.
Yeah, so there were other games announced that I know people are going to be excited for. So like Monster Boy, which is kind of like a spiritual successor to Wonder Boy, which was also released on the Nintendo Switch not too long ago. So lots of these great games, but Wonder Boy looks great. I love the hand-drawn sprite work that they've done here. The trailer, which I'm looking at right now, has some amazing cut... pretty like amazing art that I really wish we would see more animation like this in traditional animation. Animations, in my personal opinion, has been dipping in quality lately. But so many games between these two directs, we had like 30 games announced just in indies, and a good deal of them were released the day of the UK direct. So whole lot to look forward to there. Whole lot looking forward to in the future with indies, and we really have to hope that Nintendo's really paying attention to the success of these independent games that are coming out for their console, because I think the indies really kept the Switch afloat this year. Now, last year was a phenomenal year. 2017 launch year for the Switch was phenomenal. This year things have slowed down, only on like the AAA title front as far as what we're expecting from Nintendo themselves. Now, we still got games coming out this. We still have Pokemon, Let's Go Pikachu, Let's Go Eevee. We still have Smash Brothers. And we've had a couple big games this year. But for the most part, 2018 was a lot of ports. So the like the best content coming out has been indie games. So I really think that Nintendo should really appreciate where they stand with independent developers right now because they're sitting pretty.
Yeah, and you know, I'm going to be honest here. I think indies, these indie games are getting really good. I think they're kind of the new future. I mean, if we look at some of these AAA stuff, there's a big fiasco over Battlefield 5. Like, if you've been watching the stock market, EA stocks have plummeted. It's really, really bad. And I think the fact that people aren't really buying games like Call of Duty and Battlefield 5 is really telling about the where the industry is. But people are getting, instead, they're buying Dead Cells, which if you haven't touched that game's freaking fantastic. It is really, really good. That's my current addiction right now, Dead Cells. I think the indies are really going to take over in a big way. And the fact that Switch is, you know, tight with them, I think it's really going to help the console.
My only problem with a game like Dead Cells is, and we talked about this a couple weeks ago, is that it feels like Dead Cells is marred in this controversy that is Philip Mewson. Hate to bring that name back up on the show so soon, but like now whenever I hear Dead Cells, that's instantly where my brain goes, and I just think about that. I mean, at least there is, you know, when you have that kind of association, it will keep that game in the forefront, but as far as I'm concerned, it's still a really shitty place for a game like Dead Cells, which deserves much more, you know, respect than just being tied to that controversy.
Sure.
But moving things along, the next big story is that there are a couple of Smash-related things that we didn't get to talk about last time because they hadn't been announced. So we have a Super Smash Bros. Ultimate Edition bundle. And a really special edition Pro Controller. And I like this Pro Controller, man. I really do like this Pro Controller. It's got white handles, the typical black face. But on top of the face, you have a grayscale Smash ball on it. And it looks nice. It's a very subtle controller design, especially when you consider like the Xenoblade one that had come out or the Splatoon one that came out. This one is more on the subtle scale. But it has this classy feel to it that I really, really like. I like this Pro Controller. Now, my only real issue with this Pro Controller is $74.99. Fundamentally, they haven't changed any of the inner workings of this controller, but that design is really up the cost of the Pro Controller from $60 to $74.99. Don't like that price point, Nintendo. I don't like you charging extra money for a controller that you didn't make better. Love you guys, but when you guys do something I completely disagree with, I got to call you out on it. And that price point, what are you thinking with that price point, Nintendo? Serious.
Yeah, it's a bit weird. Usually controllers are about, what, 60? But I guess we've been seeing them bump up in price. I mean, what is the X-Bone Elite controllers trending at? Usually about 75 as well, right? For some of the special...
I think that Elite controller, I think, is almost like... I thought it was much more expensive than that.
Well, maybe I'm thinking of one of the other ones, because I know they have some X-Bone controllers with particular color schemes.
Yeah, it's $150.
Like... Okay, Xbox, so maybe I'm thinking of the one with, like, the chromatic blue or something, where...
You see, but you can almost justify Microsoft's cost of that controller when you consider how customizable that controller is. Oh, this Pro controller, is not customizable at all. I don't have the option to change my triggers or my analog stick or my face buttons. Like, when you have all those, like, you know, that variety of when you have a degree, blah, 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 blah. When you have that many options on a controller, it becomes more justifiable to charge more for it. This Pro controller has nothing different than the one that I bought at launch. So,
yeah. What is the, I'm not what sure. is the Pro controller normally at? It's like, is it 70?
It's $70. So they're actually charging $5 more for the design.
So
$69.99.
From a standpoint, you know, that it makes sense because that's what the other people are doing. So, for example, going back to this is what I was talking about. I actually found it up on BestBuy.com. If you look at the Ocean Shadow Special Edition Blue, that's trending at $70. versus their normal controllers, which is at 65. So I guess they're just trying to do the same sort of thing where, hey, we change the color scheme, we call it special edition, we charge $5 more. But it's shitty because I think the controllers by themselves should be at like 65. So you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, as far as the bundle is concerned for the Super Smash Bros. Ultimate, so the bundle is going to come with a limited edition GameCube controller. Mm-hmm. It's going to come with a steelbook copy of the game, and very nice steelbook, might I add. It's the Smash Ball on Fire, the way we saw in that first reveal trailer with the Inklings. And it's a whole new console, man, with that GameCube controller adapter. So if you guys didn't get that GameCube controller and that adapter last generation, you can get this bundle, at least in the UK. And you'll get all these things. And yeah, I love the black box that it comes in, man. It's a really nice black box. And I'm like, man, I almost want to buy another Switch just to get this, you know, limited edition version with the controller and the adapter. But yeah, Smash Brothers still getting love from Nintendo. They're doing this game big, man. It's like they're doing everything in their power to ensure the success of this game. All right. So our last major story was the Pokemon World Championships were last weekend, or the weekend before last. And great event, as always. But during that, the event launched with a reveal. And not a game reveal. I was totally expecting some kind of Let's Go Pikachu, Let's Go Eevee announcement. Or even maybe, you know, core Pokemon title announcement. But we didn't get that. We did get an announcement, though. It was the release date for Detective Pikachu. And we also got to see the movie's logo for the first time. Now, I love Detective Pikachu. Those who've been watching this channel this year have heard me sing the praises of that game. And I loved everything about that game. I loved the story. I loved the aesthetics. I loved the box art. And I don't know if I'm a fan of this new logo. So the movie will officially be titled Pokemon Detective Pikachu. And it's got like neon coloring, and I'm like, why did they change the Pikachu logo? Like, what was wrong with the magnifying glass eye and the word U and the letter U having the Pikachu tail at the back of it? I'm not sure I like this logo, man. Like, I've already been skeptical about this movie because of the choice of a Detective Pikachu movie. It got announced before the game was even announced to be coming worldwide. It was a weird choice for the franchise, because you could have started this movie franchise from like a Gen 1 perspective. Like, and they did kind of explain that too to IGN later, saying that there are so many movies about Ash Ketchum, we want to try something different. But you could have done that without Ash Ketchum. Like I don't really buy their reasoning of why they chose Detective Pikachu as like their starting point for a Pokemon live action film franchise. But yeah, the new logo's out. We also got the release date for the game. I believe it was May 10th of 2019 is when they have the movie scheduled right now. Could change, still pretty far away from that. But yeah, I'm not sure I like this logo. I don't necessarily hate it either, but I just really like the traditional Detective Pikachu logo that was on the box art. It's so weird to me. I don't know why they made this kind of aesthetic change. Maybe there's a bigger reason for it than I'm seeing. Maybe the studio legally couldn't use that logo. But still, I mean, why change it? I want to know. I need answers. I need more answers. But May, even though May is a little bit of a way off, I wasn't actually expecting it to come out that soon either. But I guess they did announce the movie back in 2016. So it's been 3 years. Still not really happy with Ryan Reynolds being the voice of Pikachu. I like to keep my Deadpool and my Pikachus far away from one another. But any thoughts on this logo?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of like it, but I kind of don't. And it depends on what the actual story is behind the movie itself. I don't think we've seen an actual kind of sneak peek synopsis. Not synopsis, but a sneak peek kind of treatment for what the movie's going to be about. We don't even know what era it's going to be in. Is it going to be 2018? Is it going to be set in like 1920s film noir? I mean, we really don't know as far as I'm aware.
That's the thing that kind of bothers me about this movie is the fact that, you know, while the game is set in like our, you know, current time, it has this like noirish feeling, but it's like a light noir. It's not like as dark as like LA noir by any stretch of the imagination, but it's got like these noir moments into it. Like it's got this atmosphere, and looking at this logo doesn't screen the atmosphere of a noir type setting. I think the logo for the game does a better job of capturing that aesthetic, with the eye being a magnifying glass. And then obviously, you know, it being a Pokemon game and having Pikachu's tail, you know, form the letter U, it lets you know that you're still in a Pokemon game, but it's just got that noir aspect to it. And I feel like this logo doesn't capture it. This movie logo fails at drawing my attention in the way that I feel like it should. Like you said, we don't know anything about this yet. So yeah. Maybe I'm overthinking it, but currently, like, it just has me kind of in a tizzy, if I'm being honest. But yeah, I mean, I don't really have any like hate against the logo. It's just, I'm not sure if I like it or not. Like, I think under a different circumstance, I might like it better. Maybe if it wasn't so closely associated with a game that I loved in Detective Pikachu, maybe if it was just the Pikachu logo, like Pikachu the movie, I might feel differently about it, but I did love that game, and I think that's what's kind of messing with my sensibilities here.
Yeah, I totally know what you're meaning. Like, I'm looking at these letters, and I can see, like, some of the lettering influences from some of the old neon signs that you'd see present in, like, old 1940s, old 1950s movies, you know what I mean? Like, I can see the influence there. But it still feels a little bit too modernized for me to really get the entire like noir sort of feeling. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of like old school Vegas lights, but and like it's like a marquee that you would see or something. It's a very weird logo. I don't know. Maybe it'll grow on me after I've seen a trailer and I can see, you know, what the setting of the film is and whatnot. But as of right now, I'm skeptical of a movie that I was already skeptical of to begin with, and we all know that video game movies suck. That's just the way the world works. We figured out comic book movies. We just haven't figured out video game adaptations yet. I really want to like this movie, but I just, right now, I'm not in a good space for that. Anyway, that's it. Those are our news stories. Like I said, lot of stuff to talk about. Obviously, we spent most of it talking about the nindies, but there were so many nindies to talk about. I feel like we had to give them their just due. But next up, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the latest Nintendo Direct that we just got, and that was the Direct for Dragalia Lost. So don't go anywhere, guys. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Nintendo Power Zone. Guys, we thank you for not going anywhere while we went ahead and took that break. Before we move on, though, I do want to go ahead and make good on that commitment we made last episode. So, for all the sources we used for this episode for our new segment, we used IGN, we used Nintendo World Report, Nintendo Life, and those are that's it for our sources for these last 2 weeks. We want to thank them for putting out great articles that really detail all the news stories that we cover here on this show. So good job to you guys. So without further ado, let's go ahead and talk about our highlight topic, and that's Dragalia Lost. Dragalia Lost is Nintendo's first original mobile IP developed in conjunction with Psy Games, the mobile game developer that is responsible for Grand Blue Fantasy and is partly owned by DNA, the mobile developer. Let's just start this again. Dragalia Lost is Nintendo's first original mobile IP developed in conjunction with Psy Games, the mobile game developer responsible for Grand Blue Fantasy and is partly owned by DNA, the mobile developer who has helped Nintendo make all of its mobile games up until this point. This convergence of the three companies will allow Nintendo to take its first major risk in the mobile game space. Can Nintendo succeed in the mobile arena without the help of its recognizable IPs such as Mario, Animal Crossing, and Fire Emblem? For today's Nintendo Power Zone highlight topic, we're going to talk about our thoughts on the Dragalia Lost event. So, what are we going to do about this game? There is a lot to talk about. I think it's best that we break it down individually, piece by piece. So I want to go ahead and start with the story of Dragalia Lost. They didn't give us a whole lot to go on based on its story, but what they did tell us that in this world, there is a kingdom, and the kingdom has a... trying to remember the name of the kingdom right now. The Kingdom of Alberia. There we go. And Alberia is protected by sacred shards, and the powers of these sacred shards are failing. So it's up to our main character to go ahead and find a new power source so that the kingdom won't fall. The main character is a pact bound, and a pact bound is a human who has formed a pact with a dragon known as a Midgar Somer. So that is a whole lot to talk about. But yeah, so this has a very traditional RPG-style story, which is cool because I don't think we get a whole lot of games like this on mobile. And first off, I love the term pact-bound. Something about that sounds really dope. It reminds me of something you would have heard in the movie Dragonheart back in the day. So, yes, let's see. Who was our main character?
They haven't given him a name because the idea you put your name in there, and so for example, Psy Games is a really really well known company, especially in Japan, but in the game Grand Blue Fantasy, the main character is also not named. The game itself is voice acted, so the way they get around that is they refer to the character as Dancho, which is captain, because you're the captain of a Skyfire crew. And this is probably going to do something similar. If it's in English, they'll probably just call him like Prince or Princess. I'm assuming that they're going to let you change genders. That's been pretty much a staple of all of their games that I know of. So it would be a lost thing if they don't let you do that here.
That's good. That's good to know, because I was racking my brain. I've watched that direct like 4 or 5 times, and I just didn't remember if they named him, and it's been a couple days since I last saw the direct. But yeah, I mean, the story and characters, which there are going to be a lot of characters in this game. I think they said there are up to 60 companions that will be unlockable. And that's not even including the dragons that you're going to be able to unlock in the near future. But yeah, I'm not a huge guy when it comes to like fantasy games like this, or most fantasy anything. I'm not a huge fan of things like Harry Potter or Lord of the Rings. I'm more into sci-fi, but there's something about this game that intrigues me. The whole like pack-bound thing, and like the way that our main character will fuse with the dragons, that all looks really intriguing to me. On top of that, the design of the game is really pretty. I've never played Grand Blue Fantasy. I know that is more your expertise. Like you've played Grand Blue, so you have a huge familiarity with Psy Games. And I don't know, but in my opinion, this game looks really really nice. And I guess you're gonna be the one who'll be able to tell us what we can actually expect from our next topic, which would be gameplay. To be honest, what I saw from that trailer was a lot of like a Xenoblade Chronicles Lite, in a sense. That's the way I saw it. Like, it kind of reminds me of Xenoblade, but more like a scaled down version so that it works on mobile. So that's just how I saw the game. But I'm sure you have a more in-depth analysis based on your previous playing of side games.
This is actually a different foray into the formula for side games. Side games, the big games that they're known for is Rage of Bahamut, which is a card game. Grand Blue Fantasy, which is turn-based. It's a turn-based RPG. And I think they do Shadowverse. Let me double check if they actually do that company. It's also outside games. There's also a card game, so that's more like closer to an actual real card game than Rage of Bahamut was. So this new sort of action tapping, moving around thing is a bit of a stretch for them. But when you look at the actual core, it doesn't seem to be very different from what we've seen other mobile game companies do in the past. I'm blanking on the exact names. I think the one I'm thinking of is Dragon Project. Dragon Project has done something similar to that sort of style.
Well, in that sense, if the gameplay is that fundamentally different from their other gameplays, and it seems to be more in line with the way that Nintendo wants gameplay handled as far as mobile. Nintendo's had a real big push on, when it comes to being a mobile game, is games that you can play with one hand. That was the big thing about Super Mario Run. You can play this game in vertical mode with one hand, so you can eat a cheeseburger and play the game. So it seems like that might be a Nintendo mandate, so that the gameplay is different than the traditional side games developed game and falls more in line with Nintendo's headspace for mobile developed games. It's also played vertically, just like Super Mario Run as well.
A lot of the games where you're moving around like in that sort of style. The one I was thinking of, Shido Neko Project, White Cat Project, which I don't think that ever made it stateside, but that also played very similarly. Different company. But yeah, the games like that tend to be portrait mode because of the ease of being able to play it. And especially when it comes from a cultural standpoint, a lot of these, if you've never been to Japan, you see people play mobile games on trains or various other different public transport systems. So it makes sense that one hand is holding something and you need the other hand to hold the phone. You know what I mean?
Well, that's completely different from the one big mobile game that I play a lot of is Kingdom Hearts Unity. And that game is played in the landscape mode, and I got used to it. So to see an RPG, a mobile RPG switch its orientation, it's a little off for me. I am a huge fan of landscape mode when it comes to playing a game, mobily. But yeah, I guess it makes sense according to with the way the other Nintendo developed mobile games have gone. So up to this point, we've had Super Mario Run, Miitomo, which is dead, Animal Crossing, and Fire Emblem Heroes. None of the games thus far have been an overt success, with the exception of sort of Fire Emblem. I guess financially, Fire Emblem has been a major success, and it wasn't too long ago that Miyamoto actually did he spoke at a developers conference not too long ago about the failure of Super Mario Run. And he also talked about that video game companies shouldn't be greedy when it comes to developing in the mobile landscape. It's a really good article. If you guys haven't read it, you should go look it up. But it's rare to see Miyamoto so blunt about the failure of a game that he was directly involved with. And he talked about the failures of Super Mario Run. And I think he made a lot of good points, specifically when it came down to talking about the price point. You could certainly see his side of that argument, where he's like, he didn't want to diminish the quality of a Mario game by making it free to play. But he also said that, we put a lot of money into developing this mobile game. But it just goes to show that Nintendo at that point in time didn't have a very good understanding of what the mobile landscape is when it comes to developing games in that arena. And yeah, a lot of the things he said make sense. And it makes me wonder if they took that kind of stuff into account when developing Dragalia Lost. That being said, though, Dragalia Lost looks like an entirely different beast altogether.
Real quick, though, I really want to touch on the Miyamoto thing, because for those of you who don't know the cultural implications of that, that is huge. When a Japanese game developer comes out and says, "We fucked up, we didn't understand it quite right," that's, and it's actually critical of their own industry, that is huge. The only other instance I can point back to is like way back in 2006 when Teiji Inafune left Capcom. He basically kind of said, "Yeah, Capcom's really stagnant and I don't like working there, and I really think they could do better things with their game," sort of thing. And he got roasted. The reason why we didn't see Mega Man for like 5 years was because Keiji Inafune criticized the company and the game industry. So we really, Miyamoto saying this sort of thing about the industry is, and I think it was mostly pointed towards the Japanese mobile industry because that's where a lot of the big games are coming out of right now. That's huge. And I really don't want to understate that point. That is really, really big.
On the flip side of that, Keiji Inafune did not, however, make a similar statement to Miyamoto when it came to talking about Mighty No. 9, which is odd. He was so ready to criticize Capcom, but when it came to the failure of Mighty No. 9, he's been pretty mum on that. But I mean, it makes sense. You're 100% right in that it's very rare to hear that kind of transparency from a Japanese anything Japanese, if I'm being 100% honest, because to them, failure is not an option. Like they have a very different mind when it comes to business. So yeah, it was very refreshing to hear Miyamoto speak on the failure of Super Mario Run. And it makes me wonder if they took that lesson and applied it to Grand Blue Fantasy. I mean, I think it's safe to say that this is a free-to-play game. There does seem to be a bit of monetization to this game, and I remember not too long ago you and I spoke about how Granblue handles their monetization. Do you think that's going to make could you explain that just a little bit, and do you think that they'll apply that to this game?
So this is where actual Cygames is playing it safe. If you look at their core systems, it's very, very similar to Granblue Fantasy. Granblue Fantasy also has an element system, which Dragalia Lost has. So Dragalia Lost has a set four things where they have four simples that work with each other. It's fire, wind, water, and earth. And those are kind of the rock, paper, scissors things. And then they have two over on the other side, which is light and dark. Or I don't think they call it, they called it shadow, I think is what they called it in the English translation. Or the localization, rather. Now, this is identical to Granblue Fantasy, and it's also something that you see a lot in other Eastern mobile games. So that's similar. And then the next part that's really similar is you look at the gacha systems, right? In Granblue Fantasy, they've got a gacha system where you pull, you get a 10-pull, or you 10-pull is what I do, but you can pull from the gacha and you'll get one of two things. You'll get weapons and you'll get a summon. Summons are things that you add onto your party as an addition to your party, and they give you stats, and they also have different effects and paddles. Now, the weapons is how you get additional characters. You'll get a certain weapon, and that certain weapon will unlock additional characters. I do not know if that's how this is going to work with Dragalia Lost. They haven't really specified exactly how their gacha system is going to work, but it will probably be expecting something similar. One of the biggest appeals of Granblue Fantasy is that it's basically waifu slash husbando fantasy. So if they've got a bunch of pretty boys, they got a bunch of super hot anime women waifus, and that's going to be probably one of their big money makers from this game. So from this standpoint, Cygames is playing it super safe. They've got a formula that works, and they're totally applying it here. Or maybe not totally, but you can see there's they are applying it here.
So there are going to be two types of currency, according to the press release. There's going to be the free currency, which is earned through gameplay, and that's going to be Wormite. And then we have our paid-for currency, which is Diamantium, and that looks like how they're going to handle, you know, you're going to use this type of currency to, like you said earlier, you're going to get to summon characters and dragons. Each character and dragon will have a rarity from 3 to 5. If you get a duplicate, the duplicate will be turned into an item called Eldwater to unlock higher rarity levels for your character. I'm getting all this from Nintendo World Report, just so you guys know. And so that's very similar to what you just described for Grand Blue Fantasy. So I guess that's the system that Side Games has the best. I guess they've determined that that's the best system for a game like this. And if it works for Grand Blue Fantasy, which even though I haven't played it, I know is a huge game in Japan, just based on the sheer number of advertisements I see for that game, I can only imagine that this will be successful worldwide, globally, as far as Dragalia Lost is concerned. I want to talk about the graphics of this game a little bit, because it's really interesting. I love the chibi sprites that they have in the trailer. They look really good, and it's actually a fairly good translation of the in-game art that we see with the hand-drawn characters. Looks really nice, and there's a lot of character built into these. They don't have that overall Nintendo appeal that I think most Nintendo IP have, but it has its own kind of like charisma to it that I don't think we see from Nintendo. Like, this is, you know, we see stuff like this from, you know, Xenoblade, but we don't really ever see it coming from in-house Nintendo. So I'm really in love with the sprite work that they've done for this game. And it just flows all really well together. And graphically, the game is really nice. Like, the environments that you're playing in, they're pretty detailed. And I'm like, wow, I was almost sad that this game isn't getting a Switch version, because I think I'd play this more on my Switch than I will on my mobile phone. And I still think that there's an arena for the Nintendo Switch to incorporate some of their mobile games onto the Switch. Obviously, orientation would be an issue. They'd completely have to, you know, invert the orientations, considering this is done in a portrait mode versus the Nintendo Switch's landscape screen. But it all looks really, really well done. From just aesthetically, I think this game looks amazing. All right. So this game has a multiplayer. Now, they didn't expound on it too much, but considering that it's a mobile game, I assume that this is going to connect, obviously, wirelessly, and you can play with your friends via the internet. Every single mission in this game will be playable multiplayer. That's huge. That is huge. Considering that there's so many, you know, missions going forward, I think they said there's like 80 plus missions thus far. And I assume that they'll expand the missions similar to how they've done for Grand Blue Fantasy. That is a whole lot of gameplay that can be played together with your friends. I think this is the first multiplayer game that you can actually play from Nintendo's mobile. I know that you can send your friends gifts in Animal Crossing. You can visit each other's campgrounds, but you really have no other interaction other than that. Obviously, Pokemon Go just recently added some multiplayer functionality where you can send your friends gifts, but you still can't, you know, battle or trade. Or you can trade in person, but you can't battle in person. And they really think Nintendo missed an opportunity there to tell Niantic that, hey, this should be opened up via you know, online networks. I feel like you should be able to trade with your friends who live in a different city. You shouldn't have to be standing side by side. I don't know how this is going to work. They haven't really gone into detail as to whether or not you have to be in the same room. But I would imagine that because this is a far bigger game than Pokemon Go as far as development, I would imagine that they would allow for multiplayer to be played from wherever, whenever. But yeah, I do like that aspect a lot.
That wouldn't surprise me. I mean, Side Games is a very competent company, which is very different from Niantic. I think of words that describe Niantic, competent is not one of them that comes to my head. But if in the past, Side Games has not put the "you need to be in the same room" restriction on their titles, which is good. Now, in terms of events, though, this is where Side Games shines. In Granblue Fantasy, there is not a single day that doesn't go by where some sort of event is going on. So, which is huge. That's a lot of resources putting in to your staff to create events to make sure that there's something going on all 365 and sometimes more, depending on leap year, days of the year. That's really, really big. And so Side Games is an excellent supporter of their games. This is going to be really good for Dragalia Lost.
So, that being said, since they have all those resources, in order to make a game like Granblue Fantasy and apply a lot of that logic into Dragalia Lost, how much of that? I'm trying to think about the best way to word this. Like, how do you think this will work for Nintendo going forward with their mobile games? Because DNA, up to this point, has made all of their other games in conjunction with Nintendo. This kind of looks like a Side Games developed game that Nintendo saw, they fancied it, and then they said, we'll publish this game. And this is a kind of a different theme because it's a mobile game. Side Games didn't necessarily need Nintendo to publish this game because there's no physical, release of this game. Like, how much do you think going forward that Nintendo will use the things that they learned from this game and apply it into their future mobile games? Because we still have Zelda on the horizon and Mario Kart Tour.
That's an interesting question. I mean, I could definitely see a future where Nintendo just simply does mobile in a way where they partner with big companies like Side Games. I could totally see them just doing that for their mobile titles. It would not surprise me. Now, could they learn and then try and do these things in-house? Sure. I just don't know. That'd be an interesting question for people who actually work at Nintendo Japan, because that's totally like company culture question. You know what I mean? That's hard. Any of those things are possible. But this doesn't seem to me to be like a Nintendo buyout sort of deal, because Side Games has enough money that it's not really necessary. They have enough clout. From knowing what I know about the companies, I would speculate that this is more of a good faith kind of deal.
Yeah, and to be honest, like, them working with Side Games is kind of an extension of them, of their partnership with DNA, considering that I think DNA owns a pretty big chunk of Side Games. They own 24% of the company. So in my mind, it's more of the fact that this game is an extension of that already existing deal that Nintendo has with DNA. It may be because of the fact that DNA already has their hands full with, the actual Nintendo-developed games that they're working on, which include first IP characters. And that's the thing that really draws me to this game, because this is Nintendo's first real risk when it comes to mobile games, is the fact that all the other games that have been released through the DNA partnership have had Nintendo IP to some extent. I mean, Miitomo is the one that's kind of weird, but, Nintendo does own, the Mii characters. And obviously after that, we got Fire Emblem Heroes, which Nintendo owned franchise, then Super Mario Run, obviously Mario being the flagship character, and Animal Crossing, whatever the game is called. It's not Happy Home Designer. Whatever the Animal Crossing game is, that's obviously Animal Crossing, which is one of Nintendo's most popular IP. Seeing this game and the fact that it's not using those traditional Nintendo characters is intriguing, but it also like I said earlier, it is Nintendo's first real risk. There wasn't any risk before this. Like, you knew those games would be successful to some degree because of the IP. Like, Mario is ever popular. Fire Emblem grows in popularity every year, and you really don't have to worry about Animal Crossing's success or failure. Like, it kind of succeeds regardless of whether or not they're good games. And, you know, we all have different opinions on whether or not Animal Crossing is a good game. I'm of the mind that Animal Crossing is not a good game on any platform, but, you know, I know a lot of people that would tell me otherwise. Like, and I respect that opinion. Just personally, I'm not a huge fan of Animal Crossing. So seeing Dragalia Lost, I'm actually looking forward to it because I want to know, can Nintendo succeed with something new? Like, we know they can do it on their own consoles. Obviously, Splatoon was a success, and ARMS was also a success, both selling over 1 million copies of their game, and the same applies to game like Xenoblade Chronicles 2, also successful, but it's successful when we know the franchise. With Dragalia Lost 100% new, we don't know what the success of this game will be, but personally, I look forward to finding out whether or not that they can succeed on this, and if they do succeed, is this a partnership we'll see more of? Will we see more Nintendo side game collaborations? I do know that Side Games does have a handful of console games that they've made, mostly for the PS4. Be interesting to see them work on the Nintendo Switch. Obviously, it looks like they have the resources to do that. So yeah, I'm looking forward to finding out how well this succeeds. And I'm wondering what kind of cross promotions they'll try to do, because Nintendo seems to have this thing where, like, they like to cross promote their hardcore first party IPs via their mobile games. So it'd be kind of interesting to see if, like, Yoshi ended up being like one of the dragon transformations that the Packbound has access to in like a future update. Be weird.
This is actually one of the things I wanted to talk about real quick in terms of the success. Is one of the things that has made Grand Blue Fantasy so successful is all the cross promotion events they've had with not just side game stuff, but things outside of that. It's like they've had a Love Live cross promotion. They've done something with Conan the Detective. They've done something with Sakura Wars. A whole bunch of different IPs that are obviously not side games. And I think part of the so Dragalia Lost, I have no doubts that it's going to be successful in Japan. What's going to make it successful worldwide, though, is going to be a different story. They're going to have to do a lot of marketing. And I'm really hoping one of the things that they can actually do stateside and in the global editions is get all of those cross promotions. Do not make them Japan only, because that's just going to be, I think it's going to cause more problems than help the game. Pay the extra money to get this crap done and at least give the global fans all of the promotional events.
Yeah, you see, that's something I look forward to. Is I have seen the success of Grand Blue Fantasy. Like I said, like the way Japan markets things is different than the way we market things. It's a lot more flamboyant and it's a lot more in your face in terms of the things that they show you. But I see all these commercials for Grand Blue Fantasy, and it's not a new game. That game is not new. It's like 5 years old now, and I still see commercials for it like it's the day it came out. So I know we're not going to see that kind of like extensive marketing push, because up to this point, Nintendo hasn't marketed their mobile games to that kind of degree. They don't even market their first party console games to that degree, unless it's a Mario Kart game. Like, Mario Kart games are the only games that you see that get trailers like 2, 3, 4 years after their initial release. But this is a different type of beast altogether. Their success in mobile games kind of hinges on this particular game, because, as I said earlier, it is not first party. Like, it won't just be successful because Nintendo wills it to be successful. This game needs to be successful based on the gameplay, the graphics, and the success of the way they monetize the game. Now, as you said earlier, Side Games has a really good handle on the way that they do their monetization system. Obviously, as I said, they've done a really good job marketing the game. That being said, though, this is the second time we've talked about it on the podcast. And we're hardcore Nintendo fanatics here. We talk about Nintendo on YouTube, on iTunes, and whatnot. And I think this game is really under the radar right now. I don't think Nintendo has pushed it. And it might be different in Japan. I don't know what the marketing is looking like over there. We've had one direct for this game. Did the direct sell you? Or did it? Or was it underwhelming? Because I'm going to be honest, even though I thought the direct was great, I also thought it was underwhelming. Like, it's going to appeal to me because I'm that hardcore Nintendo fan that's looking to see a Nintendo game on a mobile device. I'm looking to see Nintendo games everywhere I can. Like, it's just the way it is. In your opinion, did this reach a larger audience? Because right now I'm of the mind that it didn't. We lost you, man.
Sorry, the mute button didn't unmute. No, so I was going to say that's a really good question. I don't know. I'm really biased in this in that I'm familiar with side games and I know they do good work, and so this is why I'm checking it out. But in terms of how the general kind of public feels, I haven't been seeing a whole lot on Twitter about it. Maybe it's just I'm not seeing the right people. I'm not following the right people. I don't do Tumblr anymore, so I don't know that, but I haven't really been following, track of subreddits either. So I really, really don't know how well this is being received. I'm hoping it's not a bad sign. I'm hoping it's just because I haven't been paying attention. But we'll see.
See? All right. So I went to Nintendo's official YouTube for their Nintendo Mobile. So they have their own YouTube page that is specifically designed to advertise their mobile games. This trailer, the direct for Dragalia Lost, has only been viewed 128,000 times on the US YouTube site. It might be different if we were to check the Japanese site, but 128,000 mobile phone users saw this direct. I don't know if that's the right number. I don't know if Nintendo advertised the direct right. I think the way they've been doing announcing directs, the drive-by tweets, isn't working. It's not going to work on a new IP. It definitely works when they announced, you know, the Fire Emblem direct last year. That worked phenomenally because we know Fire Emblem. And the way they announced Super Mario Run was through an Apple keynote presentation. Like, how many people are watching an Apple keynote? Millions! Millions of people are watching an Apple keynote. So, of course, if you announce Super Mario Run at the Apple keynote, millions of people are watching. Millions of people. And I think that kind of helps attribute to the failure of Super Mario Run was the platform on which they announced it. Nintendo gets on the biggest stage they can possibly get on, announces a one-handed Mario game, and they announce, and then they're surprised by the results when it's not well received. But on the flip side, though, I think an individual direct for this game wasn't necessarily the way to go. I think it should have been shoehorned in to a larger direct. Would have been nice, though, if one of the characters from this game had a Smash trophy. Like, that would have been a really good way to cross promote this game. I'm not saying put the characters as playable, but at the very least, make them an assist trophy. And that way we start to develop that familiarity with these new characters right off the bat. And I know that's asking a lot of Daddy Sakurai, but still it would have been really interesting. But we've seen this before. We've seen Sakurai implement characters that have not yet been announced. Greninja was announced in the Smash trailer before he was actually announced as an in-game Pokemon. Sakurai actually helped come up with the design for Greninja, and obviously I believe his name is Korin from Fire Emblem Echoes was showcased in Smash Bros. For Wii U as a DLC character that really helped push that game. And I think that if they had added just one character or maybe one dragon as an assist trophy from Dragalia Lost into Smash Ultimate, would go a long way in helping this game. But like I said, I feel like Nintendo may have missed the mark in terms of how they're marketing this game. I think that Direct, as good as I thought it was, I don't think it reached the masses that it should have. And this is, like I said, this is a big deal. First, you know, Nintendo's first mobile game that's not going to feature their IP. And we already know that there are at least two more mobile games coming out, Zelda and Mario Kart 2, Tour. And Mario Kart Tour is going to be successful no matter how bad it is, because it's Mario Kart. I think The Legend of Zelda is a harder sell. But from what I've seen here with Dragalia Lost, I would be really interested in seeing Cygames develop The Legend of Zelda. The way the gameplay looks in this trailer, I think would really translate well into a, you know, it's like a 2.5D Zelda game. They could, I feel like they could really knock it out of the park. Specifically since Dragalia Lost is more of an action RPG game than it's a turn-based RPG.
Yeah, no, definitely. I definitely see where you're coming from there. I imagine that their strategy right now is that the name, the Nintendo brand, will carry far. But, I mean, who knows? We don't even know when this game's supposed to properly release, how far. So, I'm hoping that they'll ramp it up when it gets closer to launch. So, yeah, let's see.
Yeah. So, any other thoughts that you have on Dragalia Lost as a whole? Is this the right partnership for Nintendo to make? Is it better for them to utilize Cygames over DNA in this particular instance?
You know what? I think so. Cygames. So, I mean, DNA does good work, but Cygames also does fantastic work, and they're a big name. They're very competent. They're a very good match. And at the very least, because of the clout that Cygame pulls in Japan, it'll at least be successful in Japan. So I'm hoping that it'll pick up in the way some of the other Japanese games have picked up when they've been brought over to here. But we'll have to see. We'll have to see how the marketing campaign goes in the near future. I mean, shit, I could see one Super Bowl ad with the Nintendo logo, and that would be a huge boost. So we'll see. We'll see how it lands.
Yeah, so I can't believe we didn't talk about this. So the game is scheduled to launch on September 27th. So we're roughly 24 days away from this game coming out. I will be doing a live stream of this game as soon as I can. I think it's really important that, you know, we get on this game, we showcase this, maybe do some of that multiplayer so that we can test it out. And then obviously, you know, once we've had a handle on the game, we can come back and we can talk about the overall thoughts we have of the game as a whole. I'm really looking forward to it. You've really sold me overall on how the overall success of Cygames and other games that they've developed. So I'm looking forward to getting my hands on this game. That being said, though, I think that's where we're going to go ahead and we're going to wrap this episode up. But before we let you go, we got a bunch of social media links that you can hit us up on. You can hit me up on Twitter at nice1983, and you can email me at nice1983@gmail.com. You can check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/TheNintendoPowerZone. If you're a fan of this podcast, you can always download new episodes on iTunes, Google Play Music, stream episodes on Stitcher Radio. But if you want to watch us live like you're doing right now, you can catch us right here on YouTube, youtube.com/TheNintendoPowerZone. Jaden, how can the people hit you up?
I've been pretty active on Twitter lately, Twitter/JadenWinsong, @JadenWinsong, that's me. I've been trying to stream a bit more, so it's JadenWinsong on Twitch as well. So those are the big ones that I'm on for. So
yeah, and guys, I just want to let you know, we are going to try to have a larger presence on Twitch as a whole. We're still working on that, so if anybody is a dedicated streamer and wants to get in contact with us, we would like to do a bunch of more, day one streams for newly launched titles on the Nintendo Switch. So if you want to go ahead and do that for the Nintendo Power Zone, please contact us, because And now we're looking for a dedicated streamer. Outside of that, I think that's going to wrap the show up. Thank you, Jaden, so much for being on. I think this was a fantastic episode. I think you were very educated inside games and you really got me hyped for Dragalia Lost. But anyway, guys, thank you so much for watching. And remember to stay fresh. Won't let me end.
Oh, I say, why are we still alive?
Yeah, it won't let me end.
They don't want the stream to end. They're like, no, you have to stream forever.
Hey guys, if you're still here, post credit scene, because yeah, it won't let me end. All right, guys, I figured it out. Take it easy, everyone. Peace.